Should be good stuff. Should be really good stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're good.
Cool. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen. I don't know what episode it is. Doesn't really matter. Quarantine edition of Listen, but we're back in the same room, which is nice.
Socially distant.
Socially distancing, yeah. Yeah, this is exactly 2 metres, measured by the Raptors, who can't count, so I don't know whether it's any use. So we're going to start this one. We're going to hit the ground running on this one. This is something we've wanted to do for a while. Mark suggested that we watch the fifth round of the Gastelum Adesanya fight, because this always stuck out in my mind. You always said you didn't have a favourite fight until you refereed this one.
Yeah, for sure.
So, well, you preface it. So this, before I start playing it, this is the fourth round has just ended.
Yeah. I mean, this fight in particular, this was in, it was April of last year. And the people who have saw the fight or watched it live for the first time, they would, they should get what I'm saying, you know. And it's kind of like, to answer that question, for 15 years, I could never answer that question. People say to me, oh, you must have a favorite fight. And then there would be like a handful that's up on circulation. I used to talk about, you know, Jose Aldo and Chad Mendes too. I used to talk about Alex Reed and Tom Watson. There was several fights that would kind of circumnavigate around that question. But then these two guys fought in Atlanta, and I remember at the time, obviously up until the end of the fourth round, I mean, the fight was a barn burner anyway, ultra competitive. I think it was tied at 2-2 going into the fifth, but it was the fifth round that was just everything that unpackaged in the last half of that round.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly less than the last half of that round.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking at the time, I knew what I was witnessing.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of breathless. In fact, you'll see me at the end of the fight when I walk off, I've almost got my head in my hands. I was utterly mesmerized, and I knew, I was pretty sure of what I'd just witnessed.
Yeah. You like, in the moment, you were aware of what was happening around you. And
It was probably the most concentrated I've ever been as a referee. I can meticulously remember the detail, and probably the closest I'll come to that was, like I said, this was a 5-round affair, ultra competitive 5-round affair. It wasn't till the midway of the fifth round when the tide turned. Obviously, when Izzy put his foot on the gas and started getting the upper hand.
Mm.
And it's a really good training aid, you know, because people, you know, fans and whatnot, they'll reference it. Well, why didn't you stop that fight? Why didn't you? And hopefully as it unfolds, I can at least, you know, give some articulation into what's going on in my mind. But if you look at that round, this was the fifth round of a world, it was almost like scripted, because it was the last round of a world championship fight.
Mm-hmm.
That was back and forth and, you know, ultra high paced up to that point.
So do you remember what was on in your head right now as this fourth round ended and the fighters went back to the corner? Do you remember how you felt, what you were thinking?
At this point, I'm just like, you know, I want to catch a breath, because I'm thinking, you know, I was definitely witnessing, I knew I was witnessing one of the best fights I'd ever had the privilege of being stood in the middle of.
Mm.
And that was like I said, the first four rounds were incredible, but the fifth round just fucking took the biscuit, you know. And if you isolate that as a single round, if you remember, I was when I said it, you see my face, I look back and I look at my face in this fight, and I'm like, if ever I could, I don't think I could ever be more in the zone and aware of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot out of me. If you remember the Nathaniel Wood and Josh Reed fight. And that was over in one round.
Mm.
But that was kind of the closest. That's probably the second closest in terms of mental capacity as to what I'm thinking and trying to recognize that, you know, someone is still in the fight.
Yeah.
And obviously, like I said, as it plays, maybe as we're talking about it, then you'll see, because people will talk about, well, why did you stop this fight? As opposed to, well, why did you let this go on?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully with a little bit of commentary, A, it lets the fans and the viewers know what's going on in a ref's mind, but for the reasoning as well,
yeah,
as to why I'll try and take the decisions that I do.
Yeah.
And bear in mind they're in real time.
Yeah. Well, that's there's something that's that at the start of this fifth round which stuck out in my mind, and I've always remembered it. I don't know whether you noticed it at the moment, but in the shot where Adesanya turns back towards the center of the octagon and the fifth round's about
I'm ready to die.
Yeah. I mean, what a powerful mentality. You know what I mean? I'm prepared to die.
That's spine tingling, that is. Right. I didn't notice at the time, obviously. I didn't notice because I'm probably looking at the timekeeper at that point.
Yeah.
But when I saw the video afterwards, having come off and came out of what I just experienced, that sent the shivers down me, that did.
Yeah. Ooh. Beautiful. Right. Okay, let's get to it. There we go. There it is. I'm prepared to die. Prepared to die.
That's incredible.
It's a strong mentality, that is. I love it. Okay, fifth round started.
So you'll see the fifth round, you know, it's starting competitive. If anything, the first, I can't remember the actual demarcation in the round, but you'll see that, if anything, Kelvin's slightly getting the upper hand in the opening exchanges of this round.
Did you kind of feel like one of the two fighters had to put their foot on the gas in this round? Either of them?
Yes,
because one more than the other.
No, because I was a lot of fights. Sometimes you're not even in that headspace,
right?
You're not. But I kind of had it firmly in my mind. I was kind of thinking this is there for the taking. You know, I didn't think that one particular fighter had to come out and stop another. I remember it being such a competitive, wild fight up to that point.
Was there a feeling that one of the two had more to give in the fifth round?
In what way, mate?
Just like they had more energy, they had more power, more snap.
No, it was a completely clean slate to me. Mm. And I expected either fighter that came out to, I was expecting the fifth round to go either way of the previous four, back and forth, wild and frantic.
Can you think of another fight that you've been in where at the start of the fourth round it was evens and the pressure was like this? Oh, okay, go on.
So here's now, obviously, look, this is when the tide is starting to turn. Fantastic transition from Izzy there to go from the guillotine to the triangle. I mean, look at Kelvin. And here's the thing, you know.
Tell me to pause it if you need me to at any point. That's pretty good.
If you pause it there, Dan, and you look at there, this will probably, what I'm about to say will probably take more, it'll be more of a precedent as the round goes on. Because, like I've always said, when a referee's tried to give a reasoning as to their decision making, you know, why did you let this fight go on, or as opposed to, well, why didn't you let that fight go on? And it's kind of, I think I've said this before on the podcast, when I've said about, when I go backstage and talk to the, you'll know this, when I talk to the fighters one-to-one, the last thing I ask of them, the last thing I tell them is I say that if you are in a position or I think you are hurt, I need you to do one thing for me. Mm-hmm. I need you to keep fighting back. Give me something to show me you're still in the fight. Mm-hmm. And as long as it's safe to do so, I'll give you every chance to remain there. And obviously that, you know, I offer that explanation to people. Some people will take it. Some people won't. As we know, that's the way of the world. They'll think it's bullshit. It's this, it's that. They won't believe it. But, and it sounds very straightforward when I ask that of a fighter. But it's not straightforward because essentially what I'm asking, like, you'd be the same, you know, I've been refereed you multiple times and you've been the oppressor in the fight more than the oppressed, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So you've had, I think in most of the fights, you've had fighters in more danger than you have. Probably the most standout one with you was Matt Thorpe in that armbar, slightly different with a submission. And again, I'm reading everything. This is the critical thing that I've tried to, when I talk to would-be refs and we do the training and we'll watch this round, I'm not watching a fight, and it sounds silly. I'm not watching the fight. I'm reading the fight. Mm. And when I use the word read, that's when it's going to become really apparent as we move on in this round. Mm. I think if you press play again, and you'll see this is really where the tide is going to start to turn. Izzy had two good submission attempts there, the guillotine straight into the transition, straight into the triangle. Now the back up on the feet. Kelvin still fighting back. Still ultra competitive.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be particularly fazed by anything coming back.
Not at all. He's on the front foot. He's the one walking down Israel.
Yeah. Oh, that was nice.
You know, look, that's firing back with significance, and we're at the halfway point of the round.
Mm-hmm.
Now the tide is going to start to turn. Those two right hands from Israel is really the marker. That halfway point in this round is when you'll see the shift in momentum.
How do you deal with that, you know, when fight, like this happens quite often, I say, oh yeah, he's now, you can see he's starting to wobble a little bit, but he's leaving himself vulnerable because he's tired.
Of course.
Like, is he still not willing to take punches because he's tired? And I see that often. Fighters are more willing to take the punch than move because it's less fatiguing.
Yeah,
you know what
it's
I mean?
Weird. It's almost like I'll do a trade-off.
It's like, you know? Just hit me. My arms are aching.
I'll have
just
a trade-off, yeah.
You kind of start weighing the options up in your head.
Now look at where the time is, Dan. So we're obviously, as the round moves on, we're moving down all the time. Now we're getting to the last minute 30. We're just waiting for that for this knockdown.
I'm still feeling like Adesanya's winning this round even before the knockdown.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're taking it on face value, he is winning that round. But when you isolate the first minute, minute and a half.
Bang. Oh, love it.
Okay, stop right there.
Thank you very much.
Stop right there. Okay, so here's what's saying again as a referee, and you're seeing me, oh, look, my mouth's wide open. Because what am I doing? I'm doing everything a referee should be.
This is where we put the T-Rex roar in there.
So as a referee, so you'll see there, Kelvin got knocked down, and he did get knocked down concussively.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know yourself, you can be knocked down either exhaustively or concussively. There is no denying the quality of those shots that mm-hmm. Israel hit him with. But there is also no denying that Kelvin Gastelum is completely exhausted. And what you'll see when he goes down, he does everything and more that I expect of a fighter to what? To show me he's still in the fight. He goes down, his guard's wide open, his arms are to the side, and his head is still controlled. His head doesn't bounce off the canvas. That shows me he's down, but of course he's not out.
Mm-hmm.
And then what does he do? He doesn't elect to stay there on his back. He then turns to scramble and turns straight into Israel. What's he doing? He's fighting back.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize, obviously, that's what happens when I see a fighter get knocked down. You'll always see a referee close the distance, because that's what we're supposed to do. Because if he goes out at any point, you need to be able to dive in and minimize that damage.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so textbook. It's so textbook on what he did when he went down. And you watch, obviously, I'm looking at his, I need to see cognitively what he's doing. Number one, he's bracing his own head. His head doesn't slap and bounce off the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as Israel, the threat comes in, what's he doing? He's trying to better the position, get out of there and fight back.
Mm-hmm.
Let's press play.
Can I ask one question?
Of course.
Because there's just something that came to mind on the Robbie Lawler fight. I mean, I know these are both chokes, but these are the response from the human beings the same. So the Robbie Lawler choke against Ben Askren, which is obviously the in question, and then the reaction after Kevin Lee got submitted by Charles Oliveira, and as soon as it was released, he carried on fighting.
Mm-hmm.
How much can you judge on that being autopilot of a fighter? Because like Nathaniel Wood, for example, that example you used of the Josh Reed fight.
Yeah.
I would say a lot of that punch that he threw to knock Reed out was muscle memory. Like, because like when you are concussed, like your body does automatically do, like you've probably seen yourself a guy throw a punch after he's been knocked out. You know what I mean? I remember a famous knockout of a guy getting punched, and as he's going down, he brings his hands up. You know what I mean? How do you read whether that's muscle memory or not?
Well, It's a good question because, like I said, I'm not thinking about muscle memory and it, like you,
you're feeling it, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I said about Bruce Lee, isn't it? It's what I said about reading and people. Honestly, you know, like I said, you know, we're doing this because I think it's a really interesting topic, and I, like people cry out for what's in the mind of a referee, and I've been there. I've been in that position many, many times. I've been in that position in the gym. I've been in that position as an amateur. I've been in that position as a professional, on both sides, having somebody hurt and closing them, or being hurt and have somebody closing me. I've been there, and it's always gave me an appreciation and a level of understanding that stood me in good stead.
Yeah.
And that's why I said about it's so important for me to read in that moment. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Mm.
Bomb, I see you go down. What's your reaction? You're not turning away. You're not curling up into a ball. You know, you're telling me Kelvin Gastelum is the definition of a dog in this fight. He's not going out of that fight unless he's being carried out.
Mm.
And when you look at that knockdown, you see the when Izzy goes after the guillotine and then he transitions into the triangle. Not 1 second. Does Kelvin Gastelum let up or respite or try and take a break? He's immediately fighting back and doing everything he should to get out of that bad spot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you'll see him do here on this knockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll see what he does on the next one.
Okay. So he's been knocked down, he's scrambled, he's turned in, he's trying to get back to his feet here or at least work a takedown.
I mean, look at the exhaustion there. Still pushing, still fighting.
Yeah, still forced his opponent into a defensive position. Yeah. I wonder sometimes whether like that instinct that you have to be able to read a fighter like that is something that I think other fighters can learn it because you see that vulnerability sometimes in front of you. Obviously the amount of time refereeing you get to
we're gonna come up that now. Look how exhausted he is. Look how exhausted he is. And of course, there we go. So stop there again.
Head still didn't hit the canvas.
I'm recognizing at this point, look, there is no denying the impact, the quality and the power of those shots. These are not halfway shots or soft shots that Israel is connecting on Kelvin with. Make no mistake about that. But I'm also taking, you look at that, the stumble back.
Yeah.
He's hurt and he's being pushed back with landed strikes and concussively. But you see him almost wobble. And then that's what I said about the difference between you have sometimes you'll have a clean knockdown and a knockout, which is, you know, unquestionable. But you'll see here, number one, yes, the guy's hurt. And number two, he is clearly exhausted.
Mm.
Clearly exhausted.
Yeah.
And then you rightfully picked up on it straight away. So then I see the second knockdown and I'm moving, the distance closing. My field of vision narrows and I'm super highly concentrated on the reaction of this fighter. The fighter who's under duress, will you show me what I ask you to show me in the dressing room?
Mm-hmm.
Will you do what I expect you to do to allow me to let you remain in this fight?
Yeah.
And the camera doesn't lie. It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
And then I'll wait till the last knockdown when I talk about the ability to read, because that's the most pertinent point about this round when people are comparing it to perhaps other stoppages in the position that the fighter's in.
Okay. Something else I noticed as he goes down as well, his head doesn't hit the canvas and then he immediately reaches to his lip to grab something. Like, he's clearly conscious.
I think it was his gum shield.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Lands.
His gum shield was popping out.
Yeah.
And he's putting it back in. And look, turning in again.
Straight away,
turning in again.
Yeah, much more about fatigue than anything else. I'm not saying the shots weren't hurtful, but in the first round, he would have stood through those shots.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Still exhausted.
Great control from Adesanya as well in picking the shots. Now we're coming to the last 10 seconds. Look, still swinging, exhausted, clearly down. Stop right there.
Yeah.
So that's the third knockdown in quite quick succession. Look, but he sat down.
Yes.
He sat down.
Yeah.
The guy is exhausted and he's taking hard. We keep saying it. There is no denying the output of Israel Adesanya. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to take them shots in that condition either.
Yeah, yeah.
No two ways about it. But look what happened. Now, this is the most critical. I see him go down. He doesn't go down to his back. He's gone to his side. He's still fully, you know, the cognitive function is still there. I know that the 10 seconds have gone. I'm listening to that. Am I taking that into consideration? Yes, I am. You know, referees go, oh, it doesn't matter. Yes, it doesn't matter if the fighter is unconscious. It doesn't matter if the fighter is out and it's clear. I've stopped fights at 4:59. But you'll see here, I'm understanding the magnitude of what's gone on. I know what this guy, what both of these guys have gone through to get to that point. And it's almost, I remember thinking at the time, it was a couple of months before I saw Kelvin again. And I think I bumped into him in Vegas. And it's funny because it's like, you know, you share a moment. And I've said before on the podcast, I can count on one hand how many times I've wanted to go backstage to say thank you to a fighter. And I went to do it with both, but they were transported to the hospital and I never got that opportunity. But when I saw him again for the first time, he beat me to it. He shook my hand and he went, I want to thank you for you letting me finish that fight.
Very cool.
And then, like I said, in this moment, when I see him go down for the third time, I'm almost thinking, fucking stop moving. Just stop moving.
So you can stop.
And I'll stop I'll get you out of there. But then when I see him come back, when I see him still wanting to stay in that fight, I can't not let him continue. Mm-hmm. And I'm fully aware of the time that's on the clock. But if Adesanya had got clear range and shots landed on Kelvin here, I still would have been in no question to stop the fight. Mm-hmm. I would have had to. But you look at how those last 9 seconds play out. And I remember quite clearly on the commentary, when he goes down for the last time, and like I said, taking nothing away from Israel, that's the performance of his life, you know, when he became the interim champ. Mm. But I think we're both in agreeance, not taking away the quality of the shots. If I'm going to judge between a fighter being more hurt and more exhausted, you know, which...
Oh, 100%.
You can see. For and sure. It's a combination of both, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
That fight was, like I said, we can't give it any more superlatives.
No.
But I remember Joe Rogan in the commentary going, stop the fight. Yeah, I think he's panicking, you know. But then you'll hear DC straight away going, oh, Kelvin's still fighting. Because what does he do for the third time? He elects not to stay on his back and he turns back into him. So we can look at the last 9 seconds. If he would have stayed flat, you see me thinking about it there. But he's turning in, and he's, goes for the single and he stopped the onslaught.
Yeah. See, the thing is, you can tell he's exhausted here. He goes down, but he lands onto his elbow. He's like,
puts his posts.
Mate, I'm not going to tell you who the fighter is, but I've seen it a couple of times. I can tell when a fighter's not actually being hurt and they're trying to get out of the fight, because I'll see them break their own fall by putting their elbow or their hand down. I've seen it myself in a main event of a UFC fight, and I went, oh, you just wanted out.
Yeah, and this is the difficulty as a referee, recognizing when fighters will do that.
But
what's the easy way for a fighter to do that? Very easy. Dan Hardy was on the first knockdown. All Kelvin had to do was shell up, and I'm stopping the fight. Yeah. He does everything but shell up.
Yeah.
Three times he went down. Three times he's fighting for his life like a dog.
Yeah.
And then honestly, I can't. And when I say dog, I mean that in the highest accolade. Mm-hmm. He is the definition of a dog in that fight.
For sure. He
is not going away. He's going to have to be out for him to stop fighting.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, that you're seeing the last knockdown. It's almost like he sat down to get away from the onslaught. He doesn't want to take those punches anymore. He's sitting down, boom.
And hand to the back of his head as well.
Yeah,
like he does. He literally like
I'm going to hang out here for a second.
It's a reclining position. Look
down, at that.
Hand to the back of
then
the head.
Then watch him.
He thought Adesanya was going to stop coming at him with it being the last few seconds.
See, at that point when he went down, if he would have stayed on his back, I probably would have let one or two shots more land. Even though he's not out, I'm stopping the fight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stop the fight at that point. Mm-hmm. I already had it in my mind. And I remember selfishly thinking to myself, fucking hell, Kelvin, stop moving. Give me a break. But as I go to make that decision, what does he do? He turns in and gets back up and then the fight ends.
Yeah.
He's still,
the thing is there, I mean, he's bloody and he's exhausted, but he's fine.
Go back to when the fight, look at his reaction the second the fight stops.
Oh, where he sits up.
Immediately, you know, he's trying to get up anyway.
Yeah. Look at them. It looks like me at the last round of a grappling session. You sit back on your heels and you can't feel your forearms anymore. You're like, oh, okay.
But now here's the point I'm going to make. And like I said, it's not about me. I don't need everybody to like me. I don't need everybody to agree with me. I don't need everybody to at least want to try and let you understand mm-hmm. what's going on. I've devoted my life to this thing. Yeah. I fucking know what I'm doing. Am I capable of making mistakes? Of course I am. Have I made error of judgment? Of course I have. You know, but trust me. You know, I said that to, and I think I get it from most fighters. When you're hurt and you're under fight, Ben Cartley's always used to say it to me. He said, there's nobody I'd rather have more in the chaotic moments. He goes, because you remember like the we talked about Amanda Nunes and Cyborg, absolute chaos. Wanderlei Silva, Brian Stann, absolute chaos. I remember Johnny Hendricks and Carlos Condit, absolute chaos. The Nathaniel Wood, Josh Reed, absolute chaos. I'm kind of at my best then, you know, when the pressure's most. And then, you know, we'll talk about, obviously, because it's a good correlation, when people talk about, well, why didn't you stop that fight? And then they'll look at something like the Colby and Usman fight. Well, why did you stop that fight?
Do you want to put it on? Do you want that round?
Yeah, you can do.
Fifth round?
Yeah, you can do. Or even the last 30 seconds, because that's really when the tide turned. And then I will give a reasoned explanation as to what's going through my mind, and then correlate it back to what you've just saw and what I was thinking, you know.
I wish UFC Fight Pass would put these fights in chronological order, because it wrecks my head.
It is. I've noticed that when I've tried to look at some fights in the past for homework purposes. You know, it's so funny. You know, did you see that there on the video, what got caught on camera?
Yeah.
You see me walk over and shake Kamaru's hand.
Yeah.
And then I remember, obviously, back on Fight Pass, people were looking at that going, look at him, piece of shit, Goddard. He faded him. It just didn't get the camera when I walk out. I do the exact same to Colby, you know. I do the exact same, but people didn't get it on camera. You know yourself, I'll either go and fist bump or shake both fighters' hands. But it just so happened that that's the one that was caught on camera, and they think, oh, you just shook his hand.
All right, we're at 90 seconds.
Yeah, because there's a right hand that comes in, and it's kind of that's when it starts, the tide starts to turn.
But what's your perspective of this fight in comparison to what was going on in the
kind of the same?
Yeah, so you're feeling this could go 50-50.
I think this fight, stop right there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
What song is that? What is it? A Spice Girls song? It is, okay. Yeah, every time you say stop right there, this next line
stop
lyric.
Right there.
So my brain works. I can't control it.
At? Can you fucking sing? Can you really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, shut up.
He said no, but we're going to get him on camera singing.
See, here's the thing. You know, when this... it's a good question, Dan, because this fight was almost identical.
Yeah.
An amazing fight. Back and forth, obviously. I think the official scores were... It was... one judge, there were either way. There was 3-1, 1-3, and then a 2-2. And I think, you know, even in my mind, I'm not thinking about that, but I definitely know, number one, how much of a great fight it was, and number two, how competitive it was. And then I'm thinking, whichever fighter comes out, and it's eerily similar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not long left in the round. Israel starts stinging him, getting the upper hand. Mm-hmm. Not long left in the round, Usman starts stinging him, getting the upper hand.
Yeah.
There was two knockdowns here. So you'll see the first one, just before you press play again, the mechanic and the protocol's the same. You'll see me close that distance because I don't know what Colby's about to do. So you'll see him get put down. There's actually a right hand. That was something that was very pivotal in that round as well. It maybe have been 20 or 30 seconds just before the first knockdown. Mm-hmm. You'll see.
Do you want me to find it? Do we need to
see it? Nah, it's okay. People will see it. Okay. There's a really significant right hand. It doesn't drop Colby, but it sets him back. Mm. And you can see that and think, man, that's a good shot. And you can see the expression, you know. He took a very, very hard shot.
Yeah.
Then the fight continues. Then the first knockdown happens. You'll see me close the distance, as I always do.
Yeah. See, that's Bomb. Interesting. Like, he's out there, his legs are stiff, but then as he starts to get to the floor, his hands come in to stop him.
Yeah, he's fully in that fight.
Yeah.
So if you stop there, Dan. So I recognize that.
Yeah.
Obviously, you'll see me run in. He does everything I expect him to do. He reacts. He wants to get out the bad spot and get back up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's back in the fight. So I back off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second knockdown.
Yeah.
Again, quite similar to the Kelvin yep. knockdown. There is no way. He's at this point, he's still, I'm convinced he's still in this fight.
Yeah.
Because he didn't elect to go to his back.
No, he landed on his hand.
He's still cognitively functioning. He's exhausted. He's hurt all these things, puts his hand out. Just stop it there, Dan. Just stop it there. And he's still functioning. And I know at this point, he's still in the fight. So you see me close the distance. Now I've got a decision to make. And you'll see that people talk about the shots coming in back of the head. They haven't got a clue what the back of the head is. I'm not even going to dissect it on here. Because what you think is the back of the head, it's not.
Yeah.
But this is now where this is the critical element of, and I'm trying to give that insight to fans of this sport, what a referee at this level and this position is faced with. So much like the Kelvin fight, I see a fighter who's clearly hurt and he's exhausted and his opponent sensing this and he's capitalizing. At this point, it's two knockdowns. In Kelvin's case, it was three knockdowns. But you'll see in Kelvin's instance, when I go to move in and I'm telling him, what does he do? He starts moving away and starts getting out of that mm-hmm. position. And it's obviously, when the shots start coming in from Kamaru Usman at that point, again, it's like the pressure is mounting on me. When I say pressure, I mean pressure in the right context. I'm having to evaluate what's happened in the lead up to Colby being in that position and what are you giving me to work with when you're in that position, you know? And when you're face down, and I know it's hard, I know the guy's clearly hurt and clearly exhausted and he's put his heart and soul into this fight. But when you're down at that point and you're not electing to change position, two things can happen. One is you will elect to change position or you can do something to stop the strikes coming in. How many times you heard me say, as a referee, fighters have said to me afterwards, when you hear me say to a fighter, protect yourself, get out of there. Mm. The guy with the upper hand, what's he got to do? Just up the volume of strikes.
Yeah.
And it puts me in the position where I have to make a call,
yeah.
you know, rightly or wrongly, I'm going to have to make that call.
Mm-hmm.
And what amplifies this is you'll see Kelvin on that third knockdown. You know, when he goes down, you see it's almost nonchalant. You know, he's got his head behind his hand. But I've got something to read. When a fighter is face down
mm-hmm.
and I can't see his expression and I can't read what he wants to do in that fight.
Yeah.
I know there's still roughly the time left and, you know, am I taking note of it? Yes, I am. I'm also thinking of, you know, what's, like I said, it's critical to assess what's happened up to that point. You know, could I have let that fight carry on? Absolutely, I could have done, you know, if I'd have let that fight, but then what's going to happen? If a punch comes through that puts the fighter out cold on dog meat, you know?
Mm-hmm. And so is their brain potentially as well, which is what you're
potentially, yeah. And yeah. I want to give the fighters every chance. And I think I clearly, you know, like I said, when the knockdowns occur, I'm not running in and jumping, and you know, because I recognize as I run in, boom, he changes position. He's still in the fight. I can see he's posting out. He's still fully aware of what's going on, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But in this precise moment, what I'm faced with is I need to make a decision. Are you or are you not in this fight? And it's almost like a referee's worst nightmare because it's happened before, you know. When a fight is under a barrage or I see he's hurt and then you stop the fight and they immediately protest, it's like my heart sinks, you know, because I'm like, oh, you know, my heart does sink.
Mm.
But till that moment, like I said, trying to articulate and give reasoning as to what's going on in my mind. Mm. You know, I know what I'm doing. I'm not flapping and panicking in the first sign of a knockdown, I run in and stop it. Mm. I let the knockdown occur twice. And on the second knockdown, I let the time elapse between him going from that position, turtling back in. And here's the real telling thing for me is when you'll see when Colby's left hand elects to draw back from the leg to cover his head. That's also, yes, he's trying to be intelligent. Yes, it's not nice to be punched on anywhere on the head. Mm-hmm. You know, he's drawing his hand back, but then the shots will come in, and that's when it's really at the critical point. I don't know at that moment. Like I said, I can't see, I can't read, and I have to make a call based on what I've seen put you in that position. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to take unnecessary shots or damaging shots. Mm-hmm. And I know full well you're saying to a fighter, you can't sprint for 5 minutes. Fights have got to have a natural ebb and flow, and you can't expect a fighter, the second he goes down, get out of there and do something, because that's, anyone who's had a fight will know that's just not what happens. Mm-hmm. But hopefully, as I've tried to explain, when the second knockdown occurs, I give the opportunity to turn out. I give the opportunity to improve the position. Mm-hmm. But when the shots are coming in at a rate, regardless of where they're going, I had the same thing with the Sam Alvey thing. You know, I explained that before, didn't I? Mm. It was the same kind of thing. He was clearly hurt before that. It wasn't just a stuffed takedown or he was sprawled on, then the shots come in, I stop the fight. I know he's hurt before that point. And again, it's... everything amplifies, everything closes in, and I'm trying to make the right call based on what I see is the safety of that fighter at that time. And it's made even more difficult when you're face down. Mm. Because it's an incredibly hard read. Mm-hmm. I hope that.
Yeah. How does it, I mean, and I'm not saying this is necessary to you because I know you're very, very mentally strong, but like with a referee that's coming up against this kind of, you know, like judgment and critique, is there a danger that can then change the way that they approach a fight? They'll leave a fight to go too long to kind of convince everybody that it should be stopped, or, you know what I mean? Is there a danger in that? Because I've seen referees that have been known for stopping fights early in the past. And now I would say like they're letting the fights go a little bit too late sometimes. And I don't know whether that's to an extent some of the pressure from the fans and from some of the fighters even. Because, I mean, obviously the backlash that you've received from this is, I mean, it was significant. And it's, you know, it does make you question how, you know, how in love with the sport and with your job you are to have to deal with that. When you are obviously doing the right thing with the right intention, you're not putting yourself in a position to steal somebody's opportunity away from them. You're literally there to protect the sport.
Yeah.
And in a direct way, you're protecting the fighters to protect the sport. That's the overall, and I understand that, and I don't understand why other people can't. Like Robbie Lawler, when he got choked out by Ben Askren, like he reacted immediately correctly. Like he went, you know. Dominic Cruz the other week has still not let it go. You know what I mean? It's like
Robbie Lawler's reaction in that fight when he was like, "Why?" Yeah, and then he turned and goes, "Hey, shit, you're a hell of a ref." Yeah. Like, I could have cried.
Yeah.
Well, Damien Maia, I was showing that at the fighters when Damien fought Gilbert, mm-hmm. and you'll see him after the fight, and there was a quote, and he said basically, you know, the referee, I was still there. You know, he wanted to be in the fight, mm-hmm. and he said, but the referee thought, he said the referee thought I wasn't. Oh, sorry, yeah, he said the referee. The referee said that he thought I wasn't. He said, and that's okay, that's the sport.
Yeah.
I mean, how beautiful is that? It's absolutely beautiful. And like I said, if only people knew. And like going on to another point, what you said about fighters' fights perhaps elongating more than what they should. You know, people don't, it's the nuances, you know, the little subtleties. Like I said, everything, it's not just from here for me, it's from here too. But I don't let this rule this, because that's not what makes the cognitive function. I'm in those moments with the fighters because I've been there and I've, you know, not to that level, but I'm still a lifelong guy. I'm still a practitioner. I'm in there with my heart and soul with these guys. And if I'm making a decision, I'm doing it from here and here. You know, I'm just trying to do my job. you remember the week after there was the Frankie Edgar fight? I think we spoke about it before.
Yeah.
They go, well, why did you let that go on? Well, the fight wasn't 24 minutes, 10 seconds long. Mm-hmm. The fight was 40 seconds long. Frankie's knocked down. He's all over the place. I'm giving him a chance to fight back. He stands back up and I move in and grab him when he's standing, you know? Mm. Then I'm reading him. He stands up and I'm looking at him. No, that's enough. I don't want to see him down again.
Yeah.
But that, like I said, I could go on forever, you know, and you've only got to look at the comments, bro.
Of course.
You've only got to look at the comments, but... Yeah.
Like with a fighter like Frankie Edgar, like going into that fight, do you look at Frankie Edgar and look at him as a blank slate who he is right now, or do you go, Gray Maynard 1 and 2, holy shit, you know what I mean? Because when that was happening to me, in my head, I'm thinking, this is what Frankie does. He gets knocked down in the first round, then comes back.
Every fighter that. Yeah. Look, like you said, with people that go, oh, there's no idea of the clock and this, that, and the other, you know, that's not true. The clock is there. When a fight's done, it's done. But like I said, sometimes it's such a finite line. And do I referee all fights the same? Of course you don't. I'm not going to referee a first-time amateur on Cage Warriors the same as I'm going to ref a world championship contest or a main event. Mm-hmm. You know, and yes, we know that these fighters do. Does Frankie get special dispensation? No. Does the fight get dispensation because it's a main event? Yes. I'm kind of like, I can't express enough to people, just like, you'll know me because you do know me, and anybody who does know me will tell you, I'd ref my own son. Mm. When I'm in that moment, I am so down the line, it's untrue. Me and, you know, people said to me about Connor, that's a good example. Obviously, with public spat, this, that, and the other. I'd referee Connor now, tonight. Mm-hmm. And you know, it would be with the exact same professional, objective impartiality that's got me to where it's got. I make no dispensation for any fighter.
Yeah,
our fight's refereed differently for what's at stake, of course, because I'm not going to let a first time or a third or fourth time amateur go through the same sort of punishment that a guy fighting for a world title is going to take.
Yeah.
These are professional athletes at the top of the tree.
Yeah. I remember a fight that I was down at a smaller show down on the South Coast, and there was a kid in there that was getting, his arm was getting twisted up and all kinds of mangled, and it was an amateur fight. It was an amateur belt, but it was still an amateur fight. And there was a point where the referee just stepped in and stopped it. It was like, look, I can see damage being done. I'm just going to stop this right now. And the kid's coach was trying to get him to fight the referee. And the ref's like, look, if this was pro, perhaps, you know, if this was further down the line pro, absolutely. But at this stage in his career, the kid's 16, I'm not going to let him get his arm broken because he's like stubborn and ego-filled and he's a kid. Like, I get it. I was there.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, you've seen me get my arm practically twisted off. And, you know.
But that's the risk at professional level. You'll see it before, you think of Tim Sylvia or Big Nog, with both Frank Mir, funnily enough. When you see that, that's the risks. When a fighter elects not to tap, and like in a UFC, a professional or a world championship, when the arm's fully extended, am I stopping it? No. When you see the arm disfigure or break, then I step in to stop it. But that's the risk reward. Mm-hmm. I have to, at that level, that's, you have to let that happen.
Yeah.
At low level, you're not going to let that happen because you know the guy's potentially got to go to college or work on Monday, and you'll step in to make an informed, intelligent decision.
Yeah.
Well, you should.
You should, yeah. Is there anything else to be said about this? We're at the last 60 seconds.
No, I think it's like you said, you wouldn't bring it up. Like I said, my heart sinks because, you know, like when a referee is making that choice, you know?
Yeah.
And this is what people don't see. Every other person on the planet, there's only one person, you know? And like I said, Dan, look, see that those shots. If I'd have left that, and he just continues, and then Colby falls to his side and he's hammering, then I stop. Then people think it's late or this, that, and the other. I don't know what he's about to do.
So you even think about it there. I can see your posture. You're thinking about it there. He takes a shot and then you think about stepping in there and you're like, no, he's still got his hands extended.
He's going to sit out or he's going to do something. Yeah. When that left hand comes back, you know, because he's rightfully protecting himself, but it's also, that's what amplifies that that decision-making process. I'm right in that moment and I need to make that call. And then it's kind of like I said, in that instance, you know, it's happened to me before. When you fight and a fighter sits up and protests and my heart sinks, it really does sink. You know, it goes out to them. Obviously, I had no idea what was about to come from him afterwards, but that's got nothing to do with it, you know. It's just trying to give that education and insight to what a referee at my level will go through, you know. It's just... you're trying to educate and you're trying to give a thought process. So that's not always going to be enough for some people, sadly, but it is what it is.
Yeah. So what was, I mean, did you expect him to kind of, to be like he was after the fight? Did you expect him to?
No.
The thing is with Colby, he's playing a character. Like the character that he plays and the person that he is are very different things. And he'll outwardly be aggressive and mouthy towards somebody and in the back room he won't. I've seen it myself. I know it. Like the Fabricio Werdum boomerang thing, I watched that through the window. I could see his energy. He's like, I want a part of it, you know?
Like, yeah.
But like the problem is, like he's created this soap opera around his brand, and you unwittingly became a character in that soap opera.
Mm.
But that's his soap opera, but that's your real life, is the difference.
Exactly that. And yeah, it went way far and beyond where it should have done.
Yeah.
And that's all I got to say on that. Unfortunately, in this sport, in MMA, we don't have an NBA, an FA, an NFL that will step in and offer some kind of, you know, recourse or protection is the wrong word. Mm. I'm a big, ugly boy and I look after myself. And when I say look after myself, I mean in every capacity.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where bringing the sport into disrepute. I'm not an opponent of his. I'm not an, you know, it's just like I said, if you imagine if a referee had, obviously that, remember the fight with Dominic and Henry Cejudo. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Dominic was upset with a stoppage and blah, blah, blah. And then there was a fake Keith Peterson account on Twitter. Mate, the amount of people that thought that was real.
I did.
It was, did you?
Yeah.
It was untrue. And I'm like, but you imagine, like, I know, like you said, you know me, and you know that you've always said, well, you said I was the conscience of the sport.
Yeah.
I was the conscience of my mind. If I'm going to speak, and even in the face of, you know, people coming at you and that, you can't react. Mm. Especially publicly, you can't do it. If a referee had done it, your career is over. Yeah. And I'd have flushed 20 years of my life down the drain. Yeah. No matter how personally involved I felt, I know who I am and I know what I'm doing. And I know that every decision I make as a referee, you are paid to make decisions that aren't always popular. Mm. They're not always going to please people. But when you give articulated, educated reasoning, and you know that I've been, look at the state of my face and my nose and me, I've took more punches than anyone, unfortunately, you know, that doesn't make me the sacred ground, and I am capable of an error of judgment the same as any other human being. Mm-hmm. But the statistics of that happening are very slim.
Yeah.
And it is what it is, man.
Yeah, yeah. Was there a point when you, like, because the thing is, you kind of found yourself in reffing and not intended on going down that path, as I think we've discussed before. Was there a point where you realised that, hang on a minute, like, I can either be invisible or be the bad guy. I can't, you know what I mean? It's very rare that, like, and I, this is why I like to point things out when I do see a referee do something specific. Like, the one I always talk about, and I mean, I make jokes about it as well, is you catching Shogun's head as it was being taken off his shoulders by Anthony Smith.
I mean, when he got knocked out.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was literally, without having a pillow on the floor and putting a blanket over it, he couldn't have done anything more for him. And it was like, and they're the kind of things that a lot of people, that would just be missed. Because like, if you do the right thing, you're doing your job. If you're doing the wrong thing, then you're making a fuck up.
There's a good spot that is, because remember the one with the Thai guy? I mean, his was quite spec, because he dived back and caught him. But then you said to me, he goes, yeah, somebody said blah blah blah, catching people's heads, completed it, mate. Because you spotted it with the Shogun thing.
Yeah.
And I remember you also picked up, there was a fight But it was Holly Holm and Betch Kahaya.
Same thing.
The last punch came in, and I deliberately caught the punch because I didn't want. But like, listen, mate, these are the things. It's like I've always said, you know, a referee, you got to be comfortable with the fact that a referee's sole reward, okay? And reward could be the wrong thing, but a referee's, let's say recognition for doing your job and just do, and I'm totally at ease with that. A referee's sole reward for doing your job is people won't talk shit about you. If you, when the worst thing is when you make a perceived fuck up, that's it. Like MMA, some MMA fans, I've met some amazing people and they're great, you know, and like I said, everything's so relaxed now. There's no aggro. We're talking informatively. And if anybody learned to accept, it's me, you know, because I was the first and the only guy going over to the US, you know, as a Brit. And I hold it so close to my heart, it's untrue. I love being that guy and I love doing what I do. But it's almost like, you know, as a referee, I've tried to say to people, you have to, I've got this reputation. Or some people go, oh, he's a hard ass, he's this, that and the other. I don't mean to be. I'm just fucking doing my job. You know, people go about, what do you want? You know, nobody wants a strict referee, do they? Until your fucking win depends on it.
Yeah.
Then you need a referee who's, you know, like with point deduction, you do this and people say, you know, the whole thing we've laughed about, go, oh, he just wants to interject in a fight. I don't. Yeah. Trust me, I don't. I've had so many fight of the year candidates, you won't hear from me in 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Because, but then if there's an infringement and you do step in, and obviously if I'm quite stern or you're verbose in your meaning and what you're trying
to...
And you're trying to get it, but that's the role of what did you
wait? Stop. Hey, but, I've told you,
but do you want a referee who would step in? You know, if I'm handling things with authority and conviction, isn't that what you're supposed to do? I'm sorry, I'm not.
The authority is the reassurance. That's something that John McCarthy, I'm sure he's talked about that. I'm sure
massive
I've heard him
presence.
About that. Yeah, presence.
It's presence. Yeah. It's presence, Dan. That's what it is. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, like I said, it is what it is. You know, I'm not here to, I'm more comfortable with the fact that I'm not here to please everybody.
Yeah.
I'm just here to do my job. You know, it's not about being a, you just can't do it. You know, as a referee in itself, and people go, oh, you're too strict, you're this, but you need to make your mind up what you want.
Yeah.
Because people will lash referees for a foul or an infringement in a fight that they didn't pick up on or they didn't, you know, deal. You go, look at, listen to like Big John, the most revered referee in the sport, you know, number one, he's our forefather. He's still our go-to guy. Listen to how John talks to fighters in the fight when he's admonishing them for a foul. Mm. Go listen to Mike Beltran, how he's talking to fighters when he's in my zone, and then listen to me. I think I'm quite low. I'm firm, but I'm fair, you know? But you listen to how other fighters are there and they got this thing about, you know, you're arrogant, you're this. Ah, man, I don't know.
Yeah. You, like I said, you can't win. It's a thankless job, isn't it?
But like he said, it is. That's the no matter what the sport, but... Hopefully, like people always say about, we always laughed about it, and I can't laugh because they go about, oh, referees, we need to hear more of referees. You know, they should be allowed, and I've been very supportive of that, I think, because a lot of the time you'll get people trying to explain referees' decisions and that when they don't know themselves, and that's a dangerous thing. Mm. Having referees and judges, I mean, poor judges get it, you know, by the bucket load too. What do you want? Do you want that accessibility for some, even if you don't agree with me, you know, that's cool. It's no problem. You know, if what more can I do? You see something you don't like, you try and give an explanation. You don't agree with that explanation or you do. Fine. That's great. But you know, it's all the shit that comes in between with everybody. I've met a lot of fans who have had good recourse and discussion with me and said, I don't agree. I don't see it that way. No problem within there. But I've never met a fan yet who's came up to me and called me what they want to call me, like they're doing. So funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, strange that.
Strange that.
Literally, you know? Only it's only happened to me one time.
Has it?
It's happened to me one time. I was doing an autograph signing at an HMV store in Montreal. And it was after the GSP fight. And only just, not long after. And I was doing a signing. There was a table with three of us on. It was Pat Barry, Kurt Pellegrino, and then myself. And as people were coming in, they were coming down the line. That was the last one. And then you go out. And this guy had come in. And the line was a couple hours long. It was freezing outside. And I was trying to get people through and get them into warm because it was horrible outside. Anyways, this guy came in. He went Pat Barry, and then he came to Kurt Pellegrino and got his autograph cards. And then he came to me. And he just stood back from the table and he went, "I don't want yours because I fucking hate you." And I it just kind of took me by surprise. It literally never happened before. I mean,
what do you do?
You get all that. I mean, I literally just didn't do anything. I just looked at him. And then the next thing, you know what Pat Barry's hands are like? He's literally like a bunch of fucking bananas. His
fingers like bananas,
massive,
yeah.
Massive. And he just comes straight over and he went, poof, two autograph cards, just took them off him, just threw them behind him.
Good for him.
Literally just confiscated the other one.
I'd be the same. I'd have grabbed him before the autograph cards. But that's the thing, mate. It's like if somebody comes at me and says, "I don't like you, that. I'm sorry about that."
Yeah.
But I just, like I said, say what you want. Just say it to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
But it's not going to happen, is it?
Of course it's not. Not when you look like a T-Rex anyway.
Huh?
Not when you look like a T-Rex anyway. So when you're back out anyway, have you got any
plans? Moving on to the sport. And Fight Island's drawing ever closer, isn't it? Mm,
it is, isn't it?
My phone's been blowing up a bit.
Of course it has. Everyone wanted to know where it is.
Yeah, I don't know where it is.
No.
Honestly, I can't. There's enough clues out there that people... Even when I see people like, you know, the people are tweeting and this, that and the other, but I think that the UFC are obviously close to finalising things, but I need to get back out there, mate.
I need
to ref some fights, need to be involved in the sport.
Yeah. Is it weird watching the fights from a distance? Are you watching the fights as they're on?
I didn't watch the card just gone, the Gilbert Burns and Woodley fight. I didn't see that. But when they had the cards in Florida,
Jacksonville.
Yeah, they had those. So I watched pretty much most of those fights. I haven't watched. Is it this weekend's another one?
It's this weekend's 250.
Ah, right. So it's the pay per view.
Yeah. So we've got Nunes against Spencer in the main event. And then we've got bantamweights, Garbrandt, Sun Tsao, Aljamain Sterling, Corey Sandhagen. And then the other one's O'Malley against Eddie Wineland, old school WEC. And then it's like Magny and Rocco Martin are on the card and stuff. There's some good fights.
Magny and who?
Rocco Martin, Anthony Rocco
Martin. I thought we said Rockhold. Magny and Rockhold. No. That's right, the fight. So I'll probably try and stay up and watch some of the fights.
Yeah.
And but a T-Rex sleeping on the couch snoring though. I want to try and stay and watch some of the fights, but I'm just itching to get back out there. And I saw that Cage Warriors Graham was dropping a couple of hints, wasn't he? Via social. I think the confidence, obviously with what happened in the US, it's giving people the confidence
to go outside and be in groups again, and
that's one thing. But it's obviously the cards that took place in Jacksonville, having three consecutive cards, and they took it. And you'll know yourself, this is a thing with the UFC, specifically, and on the medical side, you'll know it's second to none. You know, the requirements of a fighter. That's why, you remember with Safe MMA, and I remember standing there close to tears in Harley Street at the lawyers, and people were balking at the idea of 40-odd quid for a blood test. Mm. And then I'll turn around and go, "So this blood test, I go, what's your aspirations to be a fighter?" "I want to get to UFC." "Okay, no problem. Do you know what your medical bill is when you get to the UFC? Mm. You know, when you're asking for out of competition medicals."
Yep, MRIs, blood
tests. MRIs, blood tests, your ophthalmologist exam, not an optician, an ophthalmology exams. Mm. And then you try to, but people had this weird notion that they thought that it was the promotion that pays.
Yeah.
They think the promotion should pay for the fights.
The medical bills.
Should pay for the medical.
Yeah, but you're a contractor, so it's your...
Same in boxing, professional boxing.
Yeah. It's like if you're an electrician or something, you have to pay for your own license and that kind of thing. It's the same kind of thing.
Exactly. If you buy a car from Ford, do they pay for the insurance?
No.
But people used to get... it was kind of... It's that weird thing about MMA. It's that whole educational front again.
Yeah.
You know, trying to say to fighters... You think it's expensive now, And I know it's relative to obviously what you're earning. We know, but that's the same in every sport. Mm. It's just more amplified in combat. The boxing's the same, you know. People talk about pay for MMA. Yeah, it's not relative to the pay-per-view megastars in boxing, but neither is the underside of the card either. If you went and looked at, like, you take not even an extreme of Mayweather and Conor, which is like, you know, ultra grossing fight, one of them, obviously Mayweather Pacquiao, that's still the record, right?
I think so, yeah.
But if you look at any Mayweather fight, any top billing Mayweather fight, what he's going to get paid, and then go and have a look at the payment of the undercard fighters, the difference between them is
six, 12
astronomical
and
12. In comparison to what MMA is at the top level.
Yeah. The other thing as well, though, is like you said, the question is, what do you want to do? Where do you want to get to? The other thing as well, like, you could put in a great career, get into 10, 12, 15 and 0 and not do any of your eye tests or blood tests, and then find out you've got hepatitis and not get cleared to fight. Or, I mean, you know, if I've got a potential to detach a retina, I'd rather know about that than not. And that's going to affect the rest of my career. Things that you can get fixed if you do discover them. Like, you've got to get on that kind of stuff. I remember literally the first time I went and got my eyes tested was for my UFC debut, as well as that was the first time I had an MRI scan as well.
And how many fights had you had up to that point?
25.
You was experienced.
25 pro MMA, 14 pro Muay Thai, and then amateur.
And never had
nothing.
So much as a blood test.
Nothing.
And that's the crazy thing, you know, when you said about, you see how many times the UFC will flag, you know, a potential health issue with, well, look at yourself.
Yeah.
Look at yourself. Your classic case in point, we're sitting here talking about it. You're right there.
Yeah.
About the wolf heart condition thing.
That was the first time I'd had an ECG.
And you didn't even know about it.
I didn't even know about it.
No. And it transpires, obviously, you're fit and well and healthy. It transpires, it could be nothing, but it may well not have been. You imagine if the worst happened in the middle of a fight.
That's it.
Where does that lead? People need to understand that it's the insurance and the assurance that medicals will provide.
Yeah. And what impression it leaves on the sport as well. I tell you what, I remember getting my first ophthalmology exam for my UFC debut.
Dilated.
Yeah. And I didn't realize what they were doing. I literally thought it was like an eye test. Like, they were going to, you know, A, Z, Y, you know what I mean? Like, thought they were going to take me down the card and read out the letters. So I drove myself. And I drove out. It was north of Nottingham. It took me about 40 minutes to get there. Walked in, put these drops in my eyes, and I'm sitting in the... I was sitting in the waiting room, and they were like, just wait there, we'll call you back in a few minutes. And all of a sudden, my eyes start to feel really weird. It feels like someone's squeezing your eyeball, doesn't it? And all of a sudden, like, everything starts to go blurred. And then, like, you can't, I'm sitting there reading a magazine in the waiting room, and now I can't read the magazine. And I'm starting to realize this is not working out very well. and the problem is, I was still working at the time because I'd not quit my job, so I had to get back to work. So I'd gone in and got the test done, and the guy
was like, sources.
Mate, and the guy was like, I mean, it took him 5-10 minutes to do the tests, but then you walk out and the guy's like, did you bring your sunglasses? It's a sunny day. What do I need sunglasses for? Well, you need these. And they gave me a pair of those, like, cardboard. They look like 3D. Like 3D.
The cinema.
The cheap cinema 3D sunglasses that used to be made out of cardboard. And I'm like, I'm trying to drive back to Nottingham.
Everybody's looking at, look at that twat. What the fuck's he? What's he look like?
Yeah. This 3D movie's awesome. It really feels like I'm driving.
Imagine you get stopped by the police.
No.
Eyes like, you look like mystery, dilated pupils. Like,
I was tripping.
Yeah, the thing you were off
your head. Right. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm a UFC fighter.
The thing you were off your head. Son.
No, I am, honestly.
When I first went to, when I started working in the US as well, because obviously officials are required to have medicals.
What do you have to have done?
We don't have to have dilated pupil exams. We have to have eye exams for Nevada.
I was going to say, some referees are surely not had eye exams.
Kind of goes without saying, right? Can you see well? I've got 20/20 vision, but I don't need to have dilated because referees aren't getting punched.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to anyway. So you're not having...
I punched you one time in the leg. Do you remember that? You stopped in the Manuel Garcia fight.
Oh, yeah, I remember
turned,
you said...
He turned over and he was tapping to strikes. Now I hate people tapping to strikes. I'm going at him and you jumped in and punched you in the quad. I've got it on a video camera video somewhere, and you come over to me afterwards, you were like, motherfucker.
Get off.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
Like that.
I'm telling you.
Someone leave the door open in here. What's going on with that? No, I do remember.
What test do you have to have then?
We have to have yearly medicals.
Yeah.
Obviously out of I say out of competition, out of ring medicals, and we have to have yearly eye examinations too.
Right.
But it's not dilated exams, but I have to have an up-to-date and current eye test to show that, yeah, because it kind of goes without saying, you know? Because they don't want, if a referee, I'm pretty sure Nevada don't allow it, because if you had contact, it's not allowed. If you had, because if you're in the middle of a fight and your contact fell out, it could be, depending on the severity of your eye condition, it could be embarrassing, should we say.
Yeah, yeah. Is but there any kind of drug testing?
No.
Because that was something that Dom Cruise said about Keith Peterson, didn't he, about him smelling like cigarettes and alcohol. Not that, I mean, you know. But I was just wondering if ever that happens. I mean, there was a guy you mentioned earlier in the show who happened to have refereed a fight a few times, and there's one particular video of him refereeing, I think, a bare-knuckle boxing match, and he doesn't even look like he knows where he is.
I know you're talking about.
Talking about.
Yes, like, I do.
I mean, obviously, that's never going to happen.
He was having his own good time.
He was having a lovely time. And he was loving the ring girls as well as they were walking around, like leaning on the ropes. Like
Back in the day, I've got some horror stories of refs.
Really?
Yeah. And clear, like, horror stories of refs. Yes.
We'll save that for the book for when you retire.
Horror stories of refs back in the regional shows in the UK and stuff. Some not so regional too. But yeah, they do. I haven't been drug tested. Imagine the fucking hell. I suggest you do then. Imagine the comment section. Light it up, fuckers. You can imagine it. Oh, I suggest we do drug testing. But yeah, I'm not of the persuasion of a recreational activity. So as far as referees go,
the Raptors, I mean, that don't mean you're not
gonna I could be like contaminated. Fucking Mr. Dilated Pupils over there. I'm not. It is what it is. If they want to, there was talk of it sometime.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, because obviously when you think about it, then, you know, there's obviously about alcohol and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't drink the day before a fight. Obviously after the fight, but I always said that about referees, you're kind of always on duty because you imagine I could go to Vegas, I could referee a fight, performance of a lifetime, make an incredible decision or something that was really on the money, and then, you know, you're riding the crest of a wave, then you go out and you get pissed and somebody sees you, but what are they going to remember? That's what's, you know what I mean, everyone's got a camera phone, right? Fortunately, like, if I ever drink, I kind of, it's, if you're going to get me drunk, it's an expensive night out.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it's an expensive night out. Yeah. Not like this one. We need to flash up that picture of Raptor number one of lying on the carpet in the middle of, where were we? Was it MGM or was it New York, New York?
That's not a carpet to lay on either, is it?
No, it's not. Casino carpets. We won't talk about him jumping out the chair either. But he had some after the fights. And he tried to keep up with the T-Rex, should we say. Having the fucking drink came, it was bigger than him. Was it? The drink came, it was bigger than him.
Yeah,
and then the aftershock was it's there in black and white, shall we say?
Yeah, is it? Yeah,
he's lying on his back on the carpet.
We'll have to do a special listen. We're you two sitting on that sofa, and you can sit in my place, and I'll press record on the camera
when we're allowed to get. Hey, where's the little models?
Yeah, where are the little models? Grab the T-Rex.
When it's safe to when people are allowed to be in close proximity.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should do that. But getting the guys back out to, we're all saying how much they're missing Vegas as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What's you said you've been
there you go.
Changing your diet and stuff. Let's finish on that.
Yeah, I'm good.
He had to bring his toys with him. I told him not to bother. There's enough Lego in the house.
These ain't mine.
Of course they're not. Of course they're not.
Dan Hardy, you motherfucker.
You
bought him as a present. I'm touched by that, mate. That is awesome.
They're brilliant.
Yeah, back to like for the lockdown, I was I wasn't too strict, you know, being lazy and just eating and feeling sorry for yourself, you know, and yeah, I do like a beer to have a drink. Mm-hmm. And then every week, every night kind of rolls into a weekend because there was no divide, was there?
Yeah.
People, I wasn't traveling or working. But yeah, for the, I'm be 46 this year. And I've kind of like, if I go to the gym, if I wrestle or do jiu-jitsu or whatever, a certain amount of size and athletic ability will get you so far.
Mm.
But I've kind of felt it in the last year and a bit, 18 months, that right. it's starting to, I'll be 46 this year, as I say. So I need to, I want to get into good shape. Mm. So I'm kind of like all or nothing.
Right.
And I'm going to experiment. I've never really been that strict. I've always kind of ate and drank what I want and just rocked up and trained and traveled and do what I want and just go on that, you know, same with competing. But I want to see what this is like. Yeah. So I'm kind of mixing in between, it's kind of a mix between, you know, keto slash low slash no carb and a bit of interspersed intermittent fasting.
Okay.
I'm actually going to start keeping a diary too.
Nice.
You know, just to see how it feels. And, you know, weights that I don't care what I weigh. Like I said, I'm not competing anymore. We had that conversation off camera. People say, oh, I want to be this weight. Well, why are you competing tomorrow?
Mm.
And they're like, no, I said, the first thing you do is throw away the scale because it's how you look, you know, how you feel naked if you stood in front of the mirror. And obviously, if you're training as well, how you feel. So I'm going to keep a bit of a journal and see what works. So I'm, you know, a week in at the moment. It's very early days.
It is, but you know, I'm excited. I'm excited to see what you. What
but
you
after mean. A few days, yeah. Honestly, once you know, I'm reading a lot about it too,
mm-hmm.
and obviously the journey, and obviously what you're doing when your body's in ketosis, and obviously what ketones are doing to your body as well, and how strict you've got to be, because if you jump away from it and have sugar or carbs or whatever, yes, the climb back up shouldn't be as arduous. It should be quicker. But I want to try and stay as strict as I can.
Yeah.
And I think once you get into that momentum, or hopefully once I'm in that momentum, I'm gonna see how it goes.
Yeah.
But I walk around now about 240, 245, maybe a bit more. I think I should be walking around 210, maybe something like that.
Really? You feel that?
Yeah, because it's like even when I'm a big guy. It's funny because that's what most people say.
Like, oh, you're bigger than
us. Yeah, all the nerds that talk shit, they go, oh, yeah, you're a big dude. And they go, yeah, don't fucking forget it. You don't want me lying on top of you. But when I'm training and stuff, it's like, you know, I've always been, like I said, of cardio and stuff, I was always pretty fortunate. I could always hold my own and not gas so much, but I've felt it more, you know, I am getting older.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm not a spring chicken. Like yeah. I said, 45, 46, but I still feel there's loads of mileage ahead of me. But I said to you about if I do get in and I stick to this and the benefits become incredible, half of me will be a little bit gutted thinking, why didn't you do it earlier?
Yeah.
But I keep in shape anyway, mm-hmm. but I'm going to just experiment and see where it goes
yeah.
and see how it makes me feel.
Has your weight always been fairly consistent all the way through your life, or has there been times when it's jumped up, or is it like slowly climbed? Or
when I stopped competing, because obviously the back end of my competition days, I was 205, and I looked like a young boy. I looked like a really and people, you know, I'm not saying I look young, but people don't often they don't believe my age now.
I didn't think you were 40. I thought you were a couple of years older than me.
Yeah, 40. 40. What are you now?
I'm 23. I've just turned 38.
38. Mm-hmm. See, I didn't have you down for that either.
Really?
I thought you were mid-30s tops.
Really?
38. We're old. Well, I'm fucking, I'm getting old. So yeah, people didn't believe what the age I was. I think I got my mum's skin. I was quite fortunate. But yeah, I was just, I kind of forget what I was saying then. I was talking about
that.
You're
talking about your weight changing as you
yeah.
Yeah.
When I stopped competing, like 2008 and then 2009, it crept up. I was saying to you off camera, didn't I? The heaviest I've ever been. I remember weighing myself at 122 kilos and I was like, I looked like a fucking balloon.
What's that, 122? It's 2.2, isn't it?
122 kilos, it's like 270 maybe.
Is it?
I'd be over the weight limit of 265. What is it?
Hang on, I'm going to clear it. Was it 122?
I was 122.
122 times 2.2. Oh, no.
times
268.4.
Fuck.
So you would have to cut to make heavyweight.
I'd have to cut. But I was in disgusting shape. Everybody will be searching for it in Twitter. I look at you, you fat fucking. Yeah, no problem. But then I started, and I was still training. Like, yeah. I said, I've always trained, but I was horrible shape. You know, when I stopped competing, I'm thinking, that's it, it's gone. I was drinking all the time and just being loose and, you know, drinking at home and eating crap and stuff. Then I went back to training properly. Mm. And I remember I shed a load of weight and I got down to about 105. So I was back down to like 220. Mm. And then it slowly hovered there for a few years and then it's crept back up now. I wake up now about probably 113.
Okay.
113 kilos. So what's that? 240, 245, 250, yeah. Something like yeah. that. But I think optimally, I should be walking around. I'm going to see how close to 100 kilos I get.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all about how I feel. You know, if you're not, I think the thing with the keto thing is the first couple of days are rough. You know what I'm saying? I felt a bit ill.
Mm.
And obviously right now you mentioned you're ill. Everyone's like, what the fuck? Yeah. But it's not, you realize it's kind of like to do with your eating. But once you get over that, the hunger kind of goes away.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's in the mind as well, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And I'm generally, you know, like I said, you remember the guy on Facebook, James Smith, I think his name is, quite a newfound guy. He's like shot to prominence and fame, if you like, in the last, and he ticks my box to a T because he's like so pragmatic, it's untrue. And his catchline is calorie fucking deficit. So it doesn't matter what your diet is. Doesn't matter if it's Atkins, it's this, it's that, there. It's calorie, it's CFD,
yeah.
create a deficit. Yeah. And that's what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you are cutting the carbs out or you're doing this, you're not eating after a certain hour or you're skipping breakfast, what does it all amount to? Calorie deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's basic math, science. If you expend more than is coming in, mm-hmm. you will be in a deficit. So yeah. you should be losing weight.
Yeah.
If you flip it on its head, if you're consuming more than you use up, you should be in a surplus.
Mm.
So obviously your weight will start creeping up.
Yeah.
But
even with that, like, yeah, I mean, a calorie deficit can also lead to a poorer quality of muscle. And you know what I mean? Like the calorie deficit thing is always a weird one for me because I take my calorie deficit into account after my training calories have been taken into account. You know what I mean? So I don't go, right, I need 2000 calories a day to break even. So if I do 1700, I'm below 300 calories. But if I do a workout that I know is going to make me burn another 800 calories in that day, I'm adding those calories on top to fuel that workout as well.
Of course.
You know what I mean? So I'll take the deficit off the top end of what I'm going to burn instead of, you know what I mean? Because people a lot of the time, they go for the calorie deficit based on what they should be burning if they're sitting doing nothing all day.
Every day expenditure. They don't
take into account the, you know, running up and downstairs, like, you know, housework, regular work, looking after kids, whatever.
Just sitting up,
yeah,
breathing.
Yeah. A lot of people don't take those things into account. So go on, here we go. Let's round off on this then. Because nearly 46, when you retired, you were in a very different place. What are your like keys to general health now? Like what are things that you know for sure? Like you've got to eat greens, you've got to stay hydrated, those kind of things. You know what I mean?
It's common sense, mate, isn't it? You know, if you spend a life... But then it's weird because I know some, thinking back, I haven't seen them for a few years, but back in, especially when you go into, the MMA is the same with boxing gyms as well. I remember some guys that would just, they'd be out, they'd smoke 20 fags a day, 10 pints, and walk in the gym and knock 10 rounds out like it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get guys who don't, you know, I think they're a very special breed. There's a good one with a GSP on The Ultimate Fighter, his friend Jean-Charles, who was a Thai guy.
Yeah.
And he's the same, smokes like a chimney.
Mate, Joe Schilling. I remember Joe Schilling standing outside of Frank Mir's gym smoking before sparring. Just literally Marlboro Reds.
Some people can do it.
Yeah.
But I think, like I said, it's a personal thing. You got to experiment and you got to play with it, right?
Mm.
And like I said, even after a few days, I could mentally feel the difference when I'm thinking about, and it's like you said, it's common sense. If you got a car, you got a performance car and you're forcing fucking cooking oil into it and expecting it to do the same job, it's not going to happen. Mm. A human body can't be any different, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you find the balance between what's good for you, like I said, the whole carb thing, I'm doing that at the moment to get down to I want to get lighter because I want to see how I feel. Then I, once the gym's open back up properly, you can gauge that versus your performance. Mm. You know, you have a measure there, you have a tool. And then if I think, well, I can consume, you know, it's all about the net carb intake. Mm. If I can consume more and still trying to juggle in that thing about keep, because I think when you're older, I think the keto thing is better suited to an older person. You know, I do.
To what? Something like maintain quality of muscle mass and that kind of
thing. Yeah, because if you look at, there's a really good, it's an accidental blog at the moment, is Simon, you know, Simon Hayes from Carson Gracie.
Right.
Old school guy, been around forever, very positive bloke. He's a few years ahead of me. I think he's 50 or 51, but he's in the best condition he's ever been. And that kind of gave me a kick up the backside too, because you're looking at him and he's been documenting his journey and his evidence, and he's mega strict, but he also leads a very active lifestyle. I think cycling's his thing at the moment. You know, he was doing over 100 miles on the bike, you know. I mean, the calorific expenditure of that alone is astronomical. Right, yeah. It's huge. Yeah, yeah. But he's had a really, Simon Hayes had a really, a really good detail on his Facebook page, and he watched his body transform, and he's saying at 50 years of age or 51, whatever it is, he's in the best condition of his life.
Mm.
And I want to feel that, because I do want to compete again.
Mm.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, yeah. I want to do like I said before, I've always done myself down because I've kind of rocked up, not as bad as the Jean Charles thing on The Ultimate Fighter, but I'll kind of like come off a plane journey when I've been eating and drinking, then go into a comp and expect to do right. Especially when you're going with the youngsters who do nothing but train, you can't do that, you know. But I'm thinking once I get into, you know, it's not people. It's like that thing in it. People go about, oh, I'm going to wait till the gym opens. No. Now is the time to do it. Mm. When you make a decision on something, then go after it and do it.
Yeah.
And then obviously when I'm back training and hopefully everything's back to normal, whatever that is, I'm going to set my eyes on a world masters.
Nice. Is there anybody you've ever wanted to roll with that you've never had a chance to?
Oh, well, yeah, bloody loads of people. Yeah. Really.
Anybody you'd like to compete against that you've never had a chance to?
Honestly, I'd compete against anyone
from
the grappler, because we had this conversation before. I grew up on my jiu-jitsu journey with Braulio Estima.
Yeah.
So I sat, and this is when Braulio was at the height, I sat in the world's deadliest guard for years. Nobody submitted me more than him.
Mm.
And obviously from the wrestling side too, I was always quite successful with the grappling comps.
Yeah.
Gi, not so much, you know, but like I said, a lot of it's what I've noticed in the last 18 months going and just rocking up at the gym with these young kids, some of them are killers, you know. Yeah. You can't... Sometimes I'm like, fuck, now you're struggling to keep up.
Yeah.
So I'm at a huge disadvantage. So I need to do something about that, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that's what I want to do. I want to put myself in a better position.
Yeah.
But from a competitive point of view, I would step on the mat, like a world no gi or something. Mm. I would love to step on the mat with the best there is. Yeah. And, you know.
I'd love to see you against Dean Lister. Be a good one.
That was going to happen.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love to see that. You and Dean Lister.
Yeah,
because you and Jeremy Horn.
Jeremy's a bit lighter though, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's, you know,
he's a savage,
slick, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean Dean's like, you know, well, it could, because Chris Thompson, who runs Grapple Fest, that was a match he was going to offer me, you know, and I'd have jumped at the chance.
Yeah.
But again, it was like, even the fact that I was unfit and I was out of shape. You know, how fit can you get in 2 weeks? The answer is you can't, but it's Dean Lister, you know?
Yeah.
I would love to roll with anybody. And you look at some of the level of the IB, like the Masters. I mean, I'm now Masters 3, you know? It's like, yeah, exactly.
You're in the same class as Yoda now.
The one just before him. I think next year, me and Yoda in the absolute finals. But yeah, you look at some, it's like straight killers, you know, the legends of the sport, Jean-Jay Ribeiro, and it's, you know, you look at these guys that are still competing at IBJJF level. Mm. That's, I'd love to do it just to, you know,
yeah. Be interesting to see how the shit talk died down.
How much what?
How much the shit talk had died
down. Oh, you know it ain't dying down, Dan. You know yeah, it's not true. Dying down. True. But yeah, that Dean Lister thing, it kind of, it, I was a bummer that it, that yeah, it man. Kind of skipped by, but
yeah,
Grapple Fest will be, because they were doing some real good, you know Chris Thompson, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were doing, I think it's him and Darren Morris is involved too.
Right.
And they were doing good things. Mm. And obviously grapplings get a lot of, in the last years with Polaris and EBI, et cetera,
yeah.
it's been getting a lot of traction. And then people like Gordon Ryaner.
Killing it.
Phenoms like him. Mm. Do you follow him on?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I follow him on Instagram. I'm more interested in watching him compete than watching his social media. I don't want my opinion of someone's character to influence the way that I enjoy their fights. You know, so, you know no. sometimes things
got a bit too much for me. That did.
Yeah.
But his ability,
incredible. But I mean, I still keep going back to it. It's a statement on Danaher and his coaching ability. His ability to put a structure together that have got clear pathways to follow and take somebody that has very, very little experience and give them that system and they make it work at the top level. You know, like submitting people that have got double, triple the experience of him and all the credentials in the
He's
world.
He's 24.
Yeah.
Imagine if, because you look at Gary Tonon, he was doing really well. He went to fight in 1FC and everybody's like, because, you know, again, it's all the nerds, isn't it? Well, you couldn't do it in the gi. Well, he's fucking never said he could, you know? And it's quite funny when you see him interact.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about, obviously, I think his credentials right now is, you know, if he's hell bent or hellfire sure to be the greatest, it's only a matter of time before he's widely considered as the greatest no-gi grappler that we've ever seen. To me, the greatest grappler we've ever seen is Hodger,
right.
You know, and then you got the greats, the Braulio, obviously very fortunate to be in there. My mind's gone blank now. Andre Galval, you can go back to everybody.
Yeah.
People forget that about Damien Meyer as well.
Oh, dude,
Damien Meyer's jiu-jitsu. On a world level, he was ADCC champion and multiple time world champion too in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Incredible level.
Mm. Good stuff. Good conversation. Anything else you want to talk about? We all good?
Nah, I'm just looking at what he's doing there.
Yeah, you've got to keep an eye on him. You've got to keep an eye on both of them. But yeah. Right. Thanks for joining us. Catch you next time.